Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Top Dog Underdog, running Friday, November 9th at the Chapel Theater in Milwaukee. Top Dog Underdog tells the story of a sibling rivalry between African-American brothers in a turbulent relationship punctuated with dark humor. Their names are Lincoln and Booth. This show has adult content and is not recommended for children. Again, that's Top Dog Underdog, running Friday, November 9th at the Chapel Theater, 4107 Southeast Harrison Street in Milwaukee. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What's up, KBOO listeners? This is Micah Murphy, Yuhuru Sasa President at the Oregon State Penitentiary at our 2018 annual poetry share.
As long as the earth is cracking from oil fracking, CIA practice tracking with drones over civilian homes, we losing. As long as the police still squeeze when we scream, hands up! Don't shoot! We're losing!
What we're doing today is bringing those dark corners, those things, those feelings, those emotions, those expressions to light. Yes, it's therapeutic, but not only for the person reciting, but for the person hearing as well.
Make sure y'all tune in to Prison Pipeline November 12th at 6:30 p.m. Cheer!
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Today on Flashpoints, the elections are over, but the U.S. supported Saudi slaughter and emerging famine in Yemen continues apace. We'll speak to Kathy Kelly, who is in the middle of a 3-day protest and civil disobedience in front of the United Nations to call attention to the suffering in Yemen and also an end to that bloody war. Also, Labor producer Steve Seltzer has a postmortem on the election of pro-charter cheerleader Marshall Tuck as superintendent of schools. Harvey Wasserman will also offer his yays and nays regarding yesterday's election. And the Biggs Beat returns with a searing look at the problematic founder of the company F-Hate. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. And, well, we are joined by Kathy Kelly. She's in New York City. She's been acting and protesting and trying to call attention to a expanding famine in Yemen that's being expanded and caused by the Saudi-led, U.S.-supported slaughter in Yemen. Kathy Kelly, welcome back to Flashpoints. There was an election, and this subject did not get a lot of attention, but it is one of the most critical and dangerous situation in terms of humanity and the direct impact on people in this world. Do you want to talk a little bit about why you're in front of the United Nations?
Well, thanks, Dennis. We were 70 people today, and we began across from the United Nations, and we formed a single file carrying 44 blue backpacks and the names of children, 34 of whom could be identified among those who were killed on August 9th when the Saudi warplane, using a Lockheed Martin manufactured missile, directly hit the school bus where, I mean, the children were on their school field trip. There was a video of them filming each other, very excited to be on the bus and giggling and squealing, and then they were killed. So we want to remember those children, but also where we have large puppets that represent weeping mothers holding lifeless dolls, because many, many more children will continue to suffer, and it's possible many will continue to die from hunger, from diphtheria, from cholera, and listening to the shelling of their homes and neighborhoods as they may be nearing the ends of their lives. It's a terrible nightmare that's being inflicted on people in Yemen. And the United States has been, since 2015, a very crucial part of the Saudi attacks against Yemen, the war on Yemen, a Saudi Emirati-led coalition. So we'll process over to the Saudi consulate, and tomorrow we'll form ourselves there, holding the backpacks, holding the children's names, and we won't leave. A number of us will risk arrest because we believe that those children's names are paramount and most important in terms of very, very crucial decisions over the next days. You know, will they continue to possibly so damage that port that the vital lifeline of 80% of what goes into Yemen for distribution, as people are facing starvation, lacking clean water, is this going to continue, or will the Saudis say, okay, we're going to knock it off?
I don't know if you mentioned this, but I heard some horrific figures about how many children were already dying of hunger and diseases related to malnutrition.
It's very hard to, as Luis Grande says, you know, get a grasp on the figures, on the numbers. I mean, I guess one thing I did was just think, okay, the population, the entire population of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago would represent the number of people that the UN says are at risk of moving into famine now. But, you know, it possibly 50,000 people have already died because of this war. And the United Nations has said that 400,000 children are at risk of starvation. And, you know, if children suffer severe acute malnourishment or severe malnourishment, even if they survive, they'll never develop properly, and their brains won't develop properly. And so for the entire life, the child will continue to be punished by these terrible practices of deliberately targeting the fisheries, the farms, the food production places, the roadways. And, you know, there's a woman named Martha Mondi who did a report, I think, about 2 weeks ago, and Patrick Coburn then wrote about it, saying that this definitely is an economic warfare that has deliberately targeted the infrastructure necessary to adequately feed a population.
Wow. And remind us of the level of U.S. involvement in the war. I mean, it is interesting. The United States has talked this story about response to the killing of Khashoggi in the embassy, in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. But the United States continues with Saudi to facilitate this slaughter and emerging famine, right? The U.S. is playing a key role. U.S. taxpayers are funding this.
Well, the strangulation and dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi is terrible. But, I mean, when children die of starvation, they basically die from asphyxiation. And many children have been dismembered by the bombings. You know, right after the August 9th bombing of the children on the school bus, the Saudis bombed another bus with women and children on it on August 22nd, and this has happened apace. What is the U.S. role? You know, there's a journalist named Samuel Oakford who likened the U.S. role in relation to Saudi and Emirati aerial bombardments to being like a drive-by shooting. Imagine if there's a drive-by shooting, but one group supplied the vehicle and the weapon and the ammunition and the map and the targeting and the fuel for the vehicle that the drive-by shooting used. Well, the United States is supplying to the Saudis and to the Emiratis weapons, which they sell, but they come from the United States. We're talking about cluster bombs and these huge naval ships that help to blockade ports, you know, these vital, important port areas like the port of Hodeida. And the precision-guided missiles and surveillance, even though quite often the so-called precision-guided missiles don't hit the target they're expected to hit. Now, I want to also mention that former United States Special Operations Forces warriors have been training the United Arab Emirates warriors to engage in special operations. And then it also then leads to clandestine prisons and torture. The United States has also been giving the surveillance and the refueling for the warplanes. The warplanes go up in the air, they fly out over from Saudi airspace over Yemeni airspace. They engage in bombing, sometimes three times a day, bombing areas of northern Yemen. And then they fly back over Saudi airspace. The United States planes go up, refuel the Saudi planes or the Emirati planes, and then they go right back out and do more bombing, deliberately targeting the infrastructure of the country.
Wow. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Kathy Kelly. Kathy Kelly is co-coordinator of Voices for Creative Nonviolence. She has been nominated multiple times for Nobel Peace Prize, and deservedly. She is in New York, part of a three-day protest that will end in a civil disobedience in New York City. Kathy, could you say a little bit about what's been going on there? You've been in front of the United Nations. What have you been doing there during the day? Have you been dialoguing with people? How have you been received?
Well, I want to mention that when we did a fast and across from the United Nations, not this past summer, but the previous summer to that, people came out and said, you know, we just want you to know that while you've been here fasting, some of our colleagues are crying over their paperwork on their desks because they're dealing with Yemen. So I never want to presume that people within the United Nations are callous or don't care. But I do think that the Security Council, which will be addressed by Martin Griffiths on the 16th of November, has passed resolutions which are almost like a cruel joke. And so I think it's difficult for people within the United Nations to reconcile how, you know, they've taken big, huge checks from the Saudis, from the Emiratis. You can see a photo of Antonio Guterres shaking hands with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. And the Saudis have directly said, it's been leaked, but they've directly said, we want people to kind of improve our image and help us get a better public relations situation now that we've given this money to assist with humanitarian relief within Yemen. So I think a lot of people must feel very trapped within the United Nations. But we also very much want to be in front of the Saudi mission to the UN and the Saudi consulate and the U.S. mission to the UN and the UAE mission to the UN. So we've been wanting to continue what people in New York do every Saturday. They have vigiled every Saturday now. They're on their third year in relation to the war on Yemen. We also know that there's quite a coalition of groups coming together who are saying, this is so unacceptable. We don't ever want it to seem that we're going along with the conflict-driven famine conditions. Exacerbated so much by warlords, and I think people want to say, no, we're not part of that. And that's why we had quite a positive reception to our very solemn, somber procession today. We're carrying placards that describe what happened on August 9th to the school bus, and then you know, I think it is a good educational event. I want people to know
how many there were. 45 kids, there were 45 children on the bus.
Well, there were many more because there were 71 people wounded, 56 of whom were children who survived. And you know, those children who survived, they went back to school with their backpacks. Now, those are very valuable backpacks UNICEF distributed because there are vaccines inside the backpacks and other needed goods. So those kids went back to their classes, it's, I think, 3 or 4 days ago, carrying their blood-spattered backpacks. And you can also see pictures of some of the children praying at the gravesides of their colleagues. And then there are also empty graves. And it's kind of macabre. But, you know, when the EMT people go out to those sites after many dozens of people have been dismembered and blown apart, it's hard to reassemble the body parts and identify who was actually killed. So there are 6 empty graves, and it's just presumed that those children who couldn't be found would have been buried in those graves.
Wow. Again, we're speaking with Kathy Kelly. We're talking about Yemen, a situation that is an emerging famine. There are warnings coming from every human rights organization worth its salt in this world, and the situation continues to grow worse. You really can't. It's hard to comprehend how many people are already starving to death, what hunger is doing to the people there. But you will continue tomorrow, Kathy Kelly, and then, as you said, you will plan to get arrested. Why is it important for you to step over that line at this point?
I think we need to try to bring these issues before the court of public opinion and also into the judicial branch of government. So if there is a chance to go before a judge and explain why we decided that we had to, in a sense,